The Australian Fitness Podcast is for anyone interested in understanding fitness, training, health, wellness, nutrition, and all things about health optimization. I interview experts from many different backgrounds, skill sets, and career paths. This is a podcast which provides valuable insight for anyone wanting to know more about optimizing their health and learning from those that have dedicated their careers and sometimes their lives doing so. Australian Fitness Podcast, episode 51, and we're back with the commando. Steve Willis has been training humans for a very, very long time. It's only with this kind of life dedicated to all things physical that you can have the kind of insight that Steve has, and it's evident. I love talking to this guy and tapping into his knowledge and insight. He's measured, honest, and forthright, yet at the same time, you can just tell that if he was your coach, he'd be right in your corner. This chat covers training, of course, how he managed 2020, how his own experiences have shaped his philosophy, don't they all? The value of the elements and being outdoors, and a little bit about his favourite kit for setting up your own home gym training space. If you're in Sydney or if you want to connect with Steve as a coach, here are his details. Enjoy the podcast. Back on the Australian Fitness Podcast, we're heading up to sunny New South Wales today. Well, I hope it's sunny. And we've got Steve Willis on the line with us, the commando. Now, Steve, believe it or not, was one of my very first guests. In fact, I did some looking back on the podcast. Mate, you were here on episode 7. We're now at episode 51. Good afternoon. How are you, buddy?
I'm well, thanks, Ross. Yourself?
I'm very well. So how about that? You were episode 7, and it's taken me 44 episodes to get you back on. I'm a bit rude, aren't I?
Nah. Hey, mate, it would have taken me a lot longer to figure out that it was 44. Count, like a typical trainer. That again?
We're good at counting to 10 and saying two more, aren't we?
Yeah. What do you mean? We're already at 15. Nah, in my book, you're at 9. One more.
One more. It never fails. It never fails. Mate, it's good to talk to you. It's really good to see you again, and we're going to explore a little bit of the training stuff today. I just want to ask you straight out though. This is a question that I'm just curious about. But you know, you spent 7 or 8 years on the Biggest Loser. How many seasons did you do?
I did 10 seasons.
10 seasons, right? Yeah,
so from the second season, it spanned over 10 years from 2005 to 2015.
Mm. So in that time, roughly, can you remember roughly how many people you actually trained individually? How many people went through the episodes and were part of Team Commando?
Well, it was broken down, and we usually started out with a team, and you know each season had, you know, an overarching name. So it might have been families, or remember we ran one actually in Victoria, where it was the town of Ararat, and it was about, you know, encouraging rural towns and the like to be a little more focused on their health and well-being. But to answer the question, how many we'd start out with about, I think we'd start out with a team of 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would dwindle as people got eliminated. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so what's that? Well, it was 64 people. If you worked off 8 seasons, 10 seasons, 80 people, you'd start over the span of, you know, the life of Biggest Loser. And you'd get down to where you might only have towards the end 2 or 3, you know, contestants left. Sometimes some of the trainers had no contestants left, and then production would go, well, we're just going to take from here and we're just going to give over here. And it's like, oh, damn it, lost a contestant. That's kind of, you know, how it worked. The magic of television.
Yeah, of course. My question, my lead up to this is, of all of those people you worked with, do you still have contact with any of them? Do you still know where they're at? Yeah. Do they still reach out to you? Do you still train some of them?
No, I don't train any of them. Just geographical or just due to, you know, the locations that a lot of them live in Australia. But the last season that we did, the families, the Avale family, which is down your way in Victoria, they mm-hmm. actually went on and bought a gym after or bought into a gym, bought a CrossFit type gym, and got stuck in there. I talked to them, you know, via social media, email, over the phone. Yeah. There's one of the ladies that Shaz that I trained out of Ararat. She was in my team, Sharon, yeah. And you know, we touch base from time to time. Another lady from the very first season that I did, Kimberly. Right. You know, we converse from time to time. So it's it's sporadic, you know, just due to, I guess, time in and of itself. But you know, I hear from people, here and there, they'll have a question about something, or this, you know, their profile pops up, you know, in a feed because of something else that you've viewed, and yeah, you cross paths. Actually, I didn't train, or she wasn't in my team, but Margie Cummins, who won a season a while back, you know, she's constantly messaging on my social media, kind of commenting on things that I post. So yeah, it's kind of good. Yeah, like anybody, mate, they all have their struggles. And that was one of the reasons why they were there in the first place. Mm. But, you know, they're just, I guess, doing the best that they can with, you know, what they learned from that and, you know, life moving forward.
Yeah, hopefully, I mean, the I guess the thing you hope is that you've imparted enough wisdom and knowledge onto them so that they can start to become self-managing. You know, that's really, I'm not sure who said it to me, but I remember when I first started out, someone said, if you can make yourself redundant as a trainer, then you've done a good job.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's something that, you know, I took from my military days, and, you know, I kind of went into the life of a PT and a trainer at the forefront of my mind was, you want to get people to a place where they're self-actualizing. They can do this for themselves, or with a bit of motivation here and there and kind of touching base, you know, off they go. But I think the lay of the land and just humanity and where it's at nowadays with our levels of physical activity and just so many plates spinning, your health and well-being isn't particularly at the top of the ladder.
Mm. Well, for some people, mate, it's not anywhere near the top of the ladder. It's right at the very bottom. In fact, for some people, it's not even part of their daily thinking or lifestyle. And that's where the problem lies. It's those people that we've got to try and reach out to, isn't it? The ones that don't even consider the importance of it, don't pay attention to it, don't give any effort to it, and then one day they wake up, they're 55, and they've got some kind of serious health condition that could be life-threatening.
I agree with you. But and there's so many great trainers, coaches, you know, whatever it is we want to call ourselves, kind of in an industry, but, you know, preaching a certain message and you know, we have this podcast about it and encouraging one another and inspiring and mentoring and role models and all this wonderful stuff. But there isn't a real unified collective effort.
Mm.
And that's I don't know, that's something that maybe I'm a bit older now, and, you know, when, you know, conversing with someone like yourself, you ponder on. And it's like, what are some of the things that we can do collectively to, you know, from a place of where, yeah, there's always self-interest, yeah, but where it's for the greater good. And it's one thing in a peer sense, you know, with our age groups and brackets and everything like that. But what it's the messaging, yeah. Mm. And what are the adults of the current era doing? And what is the messages that we're relaying to the youth?
Yep.
And that's, well, the youth of the future, and the youth are actually more inactive than we ever were.
Correct. And that's what I've got to actually, you know, I've got to wear a couple of different hats, as do you. You know, sometimes you're a coach and a mentor and a trainer. Sometimes you're a father and a parent, and you're conscious of, I guess, presenting and providing a good example to your own kids, because I mean they're the ones that obviously I've got to influence the most. And so part of my job as a parent, as I've said to other people, has always been to try and gently but consciously promote the importance of these kids, or my kids, growing up with physical activity, exercise and nutrition as part of their lifestyle. And it's normal for them. It's not abnormal for them. You know, I haven't forced them to exercise. They've just seen me exercise. Yeah, they've seen me. Yeah, it's normal. It's normal.
And so what is normal? And, you know, God, listening to you just then had me thinking about, and everyone goes, oh, but the children are so active. But we have children in so many activities that they become confused. And we're farming it out to everybody else to be those mentors, to be those role models, you know, put them into a team sport, doing, yet, you know, we sit at, well, not, I say we, because I'm talking again collectively, but that's how I tend to think. And then we don't, I guess, reinforce or encourage, promote, you know, provide as a permission piece for our children from in the home, that it's the small things that count. It's not just getting out on the footy field and doing the train. It's everything. Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of spoken about it time and time, uncomfortable, mundane, boring jobs that need to be done. And it's the same within, you know, if we talk about training and exercise, you know, most people, it's not until they're visiting the physio, the chiro, the specialist or the like, and they're told, well, you need to be doing more of this. And then they still don't do it. Mm-hmm. It's all the small things, because everyone's more focused on output. I want a heavier deadlift. I want to be able to run faster. It's so output driven that we overlook the foundation of what creates and provides us the ability to do all of those things. And children don't even have that foundation.
No. They have to learn that over time. I mean, you know what? I reckon someone like you, who's exercised for probably the better part of 30 years, maybe longer. I reckon in our first podcast, you told me that you were training quite consistently and consciously as a teenager, 14, 15, is that right?
Yeah. So that's 30 years. Yeah.
30 years. So for the better part of 30 years, exercise has been an integral part of your life. And people say, you know, people say to me, because I'm the same, it's been a big part of my world as well. People say, how do you stay motivated? How do you keep yourself fired up and wanting to train all the time? And I said, well, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I don't want to do it. But what keeps me going is I know that whilst I exercise, train, stay healthy, keep my body, you know, in good working order, the rewards come, because, you know, someday you'll find yourself out there on the park with the kids, or, you know, we love water skiing. So we go water skiing with our boys, and I still ski with them just as hard as they do.
Yeah.
You know, they're 15 and 21, I'm 53, and I still get out on the water and play with them just as hard as they go, and that's the reward. It's those things that you do when perhaps other parents are sitting on the sideline and missing out. You know, you still do really cool stuff with your kids because you've kept capable. Yourself healthy. Yeah, you're capable. Capable. Yeah.
And that's you know, that's something that was really drummed into us in the military, is GPP, general physical preparedness. That's what they used to say to us. You got to be able to get to the fight, but you've got to have enough left in you to be able to fight the fight. And getting to the fight might be 40 Ks.
Yeah.
You know, walking. Yeah. And then you've got to be able to slog it out, you know, run down, crawl, observe, aim, fire, do these drills where you're up and down and you're crawling, and you've got to go into things with your eyes open. And it's like it's like a boxer who doesn't have the conditioning. He's going to get his head knocked off because he runs out of steam, the blinkers come on, and he becomes an emotional wreck, and he gets his freaking block knocked off.
Yeah, you know, if you don't.
Yeah, it's the same as a footy field or anything, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if you don't have the, as you say, the general physical preparedness to last the duration of whatever it is that you have to do, whether that's a a 10-minute ski on the water or a 2-hour football game or a 3-day, you know, battle in a war zone, which, you know, might go on and off, on and on for 3 days. Who knows? Mm. You know, it's all relevant to your situation. Your definition of GPP might be as a 65-year-old male or female, you might just want to play with your grandkids and not have a sore back the next day. Yeah. It's all relative. It's all relevant. But, you know,
that's a big thing.
It's our job, isn't it, mate? It's our job to continue to educate people about just how important it is to keep, you get one body, you get one chance.
100%, 100%. Yeah. But back to what you said, that relative aspect, you know, plays into everything that we do in life. But the other thing is the consideration of what you're getting yourself into.
Mm-hmm.
And I think therein lies, you know, the role of a mentor, you know, someone who's got the experience, you know, they've been through the ringer, and they contain within them the ability to help accelerate or remove a lot of the obstacles that they themselves had to deal with. And it's fast tracking, isn't it? Now, look at, you know, I love CrossFit, and I got into CrossFit when I was about 30, and just again, it's that GPP. It's a variety of skill sets and levels, and you're not trying to be the best at any one, but you're trying to just hone and just have a solid foundation. Yeah. And look at kids now, and, you know, on the other side, who are actually engaging in physical activity, and with that knowledge and that understanding that those who've been doing it are imparting into the youth. And some of these teenagers and guys and girls in their early 20s are absolute beasts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just doing things that you know, the original people in that CrossFit type world, it was owning them every day. Like, they're just like Olympic weightlifting, and just how that's, you know, explode and is on the scene. And, you know, even with the gymnastics and calisthenics, and like seeing these people doing push up, like in a planche position, you know, with their entire body off the ground doing push, like it just blows me away. Just when someone's dedicated to something and there's a willingness to just immerse themselves and do the work, what they achieve.
Yeah, that's it. It's starting early, setting those habits up early and maintaining them for a period of time. It's amazing what can be done. I want to ask you a little bit more about the specifics of what you're doing at the moment, though. You seem to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but you seem to be doing a lot of your work at the moment outdoors.
Yeah, well, COVID was kind of the instigator of that.
Yeah.
And lockdown. So the reason for it is a lot of my work, I used to travel, and I used to do a lot of group sessions for gyms, for council, you know, for in a more corporate and you know, where there was kind of media involved.
Yeah.
What do you call them? When big businesses would get together and have their kind of AGMs or conferences and the like, and that just evaporated. It was gone.
Mm.
And then we were in lockdown here in New South Wales, and I was like, heck, I don't have a job. What am I going to do? So I started doing some online work, and then they lifted the restrictions, and you could train small groups. And mate, got the four-wheel drive, as you can see. Well, behind me, there's loads of equipment. It's everywhere, and I just pulled it all together. And again, from having a military background and doing a lot of outdoor training, and kind of what I did on The Biggest Loser and the role of the commando was again outdoors. I just started running like boot camps and outdoor functional sessions. And mate, we only did it on weekends to start with, and we'd have 90 to 120 people through. You know, like that session after session, that's like in one go because of the restrictions. And then people wanted more of it. So I kind of went from, you know, doing everything that I've been doing and out there, and then COVID just, you know, just axed that, to grassroots, you know, in front of people, kind of, you know, working your magic. And you know, Get Commando Fit, that was kind of born in the online sense, is now a more face-to-face, you know, group outdoor training sessions, which are not too different to what, you know, you would do indoors. It's just that we've got to lug the equipment around and set it up outside and deal with Mother Nature, whether that's, you know, a cold day, a rainy day, or it's hot. And you just got to be smart and heed the advice of Mother Nature. And you might want to, in your head, have the best intentions and be wanting to try and achieve something, and nature goes, not a chance today, sucker. And you've got to be okay with that. And I think a lot of our clients have a new appreciation for all of that, because when you do create a controlled environment, it's amazing what you can achieve from within that. But is it real?
Yep.
And that's back to, again, my military training. A lot of what we did was outdoors in the elements. And a lot of the time, mate, we were wet, we were cold, we were worn out. There was no hot shower at the end of the day or at the end of an hour's training session, where most people, you know, they can get in their car, put the heater on, go and have a warm hot shower and kind of renew themselves. And it's humbling. But again, when you immerse yourself, it's just something that humans, we're adaptable. When you're open-minded enough and willing to just to have a go, it's amazing just how resilient we are.
Yeah, there's value in that, isn't there, mate? Like, you know, you just described the fact that you had to take a lot of what you do back to basics and also back to the outdoors. But I guarantee you that would have probably, as inconvenient as it was for you, it probably reinvigorated an aspect of you that had been dormant for a long period of time. And that's driving people and helping people and pushing people outdoors in the elements and helping them deal with the discomfort of all of that.
Yeah, and that's something that's created new challenges for us, you know, as a business and client retention. You know, what are the things that we need to do? You know, how do we articulate that to provide maybe a train of thought or a concept or an idea that someone can kind of take hold of and then have their own journey with it, walk that, you know, for themselves. And because other than that, when the fear kicks in and you're just grasping, mate, everyone just turns and runs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With all of these people that you're working with, now I know probably many of them, you know, would just love the experience of training outdoors and being under your direction and being under your guidance. But I know a lot of people too are into the numbers and the you know, how fast can I run? How much can I lift? Am I improving? How do you quantify that? Have you got a sort of a process in place for that? How do you measure? How do you assess? How do you provide, you know, feedback on that stuff?
Yeah, like I guess a lot of it is just awareness and how we are, again, describe certain things in the training sessions. And a lot of it for me is helping people to be more present about how they move. And a lot of the time it's unfortunately the nature of training. An injury presents itself for people, and it's not until then that they go, oh, I get what it is that you're talking about. I need to be more aware. I'm loading, you know, through my dominant side a lot more, so I'm ending up with a lot of issues through that lower back, or they're tweaking their shoulder or their midlines, you know, whatever it might be. But they see it when it comes to, you know, we kind of add some benchmark type workouts in there, even if it's only single lifts.
Yep.
And it's not that we ask people to go for PRs. And, you know, if someone has a 100-kilo deadlift, you know, that they did a month ago, all right, today's PR day and you know, you're going for that 100. I always bring in that relative aspect because,
yep,
you know, of what everything else that's going on for people in their everyday life. And if they happen to beat that by a kilo, half a kilo, whatever it is, you know, well, it shows the effort that they're applying, and there's an improvement in that sense. You know, even with, I guess, capacity type workouts, where it's how many rounds can you complete in a certain time frame, and people do it. You know, even the measure of having 600 meter runs in a workout, and at the start they needed to walk part of it, or they could only run one, and then they walked the next one. And they're like, well, I'm running every one of them now.
Yeah.
And then what that does too is people start to fall in love with certain parts of workouts. So some people like, you know, the Olympic lifting or the strength component or the cardio. And then they start to go off and do more of that. So we've got people mm-hmm. that are getting into the obstacle course racing because they like to test their skills in that sense. And then there's others who've gotten into doing a little more running. So they're doing, you know, half marathons and marathons and the like. It's great to see because they, you know, you're helping them to kind of open the door, but they're the ones, you know, opening it fully and going after the experience. And because there's a certain joy and happiness that they derive from that. And, you know, I'm not going to hold them back and say, well, no, you need to be doing what what I'm prescribing. Like, it's back to what we said at the start. It's helping people to kind of find what brings them joy and happiness in health and well-being, and then to go after it.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all know, don't we, that if you're doing something that's good for you, but you're also deriving, as you say, joy and pleasure from doing that, then your likelihood of sticking. What was that?
You're on the right path. Like, yeah, keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
But
yeah,
that's what people do too. But they go and then they go, oh, but why are you doing that? You should be doing this. And then people stop doing the things they love because they feel like they've got to do something else to fit in. And it's like, oh my God. You know, it's like even with running shoes, and that's another thing at the moment. But you know, with people, it's just like you gotta be aware of yourself and you know, and just the things that you're good at and you're not so good at, and you know, for a guy and gender and weight and size, and you know, like a 50-kilo girl is going to wear different running shoes to someone who's a 100-kilo guy. It's like,
yeah,
you know, and you know, are you wearing the shoe just for the brand, or you're actually wearing it because you know you've done your research and you know you kind of listen to the opinions of those who kind of are immersed in what it is that you're looking to get into. But back to your question. other means of measure for people and just seeing progression, we're actually working on that at the moment. And that's like, we've got a booking app that we use at the moment so people can book into sessions and, you know, a whole host of different things. But having one that also we can provide our workout of the day and then when they complete that, they put, you know, the weights that they shifted, you know, the time that they did, whatever it might be. And then with consistency, it builds a picture for them and it shows them the metrics and, you know, maybe areas that they need to spend a little more time on and improve. And one area for everybody is mobility, function, and range of movement. Mm-hmm. You know, yoga, Pilates, that type of stuff. It's all those small things. And people are inhibited, especially those who are a bit older, who tend to get into exercise, they recognize the importance of it and then the benefits. What restricts them is a lot of the time is they're like a telegraph pole. They're rigid.
I was going to ask you, and you've led me into this next question beautifully, because you've been training people for such a long time and because you yourself have been exercising for such a long time, what would be your advice to people that are listening to you at the moment about how they need to or should look at or should at least contemplate the concept of changing their training as they age? Because, you know, as much as we want to hang on to some of the crazy stuff that we used to do when we were 20, as a 45-year-old and myself as a 53-year-old, you know, I shouldn't be doing those sorts of things. I could probably attempt them, but I'd pay the price, wouldn't I, physically? So what is your advice to people in a general sense about, you know, how would you take someone through their exercise life from a 20-year-old to a 30 to a 40 to a 50? Touch on some of those things for me.
Yeah, again, looking back to when I was, you know, 20, my 20s, and you know, just my mindset and how I approached life, like I was like, if I was going to do something, I was going to do it. I was going to do it hard, and I just go after it. And you think you're bulletproof, you know, you're 10 foot tall and bulletproof, but I wish that I had. again, I guess I've always been quite fortunate with mobility and range of movement. It's something that has resonated with me, but I should have done more of it when I was younger, because it definitely would have, I probably would have found myself in a much better place. And again, focusing on those small things. But as someone gets older, the guidance kind of steers towards those ranges of movement, mobility, and finding a rhythm and a flow. I think that spans, you know, from whether you're young to older. But what are the drivers? Like, what are the things that you're being aware of? The things that you're going after, and what are the things that you can put into place to help you achieve that? Now, younger generations tend to have better mobility and function range of movement just because of, you know, you haven't broken yourself time and time again. Whereas the old, you know, those getting into it when they're older, they're going to need that mobility and focus on probably a little more of the yin side of things, going into things a little slower, bringing them back to their breathing, holding positions for longer periods of time, and then, you know, strengthening the foundation, bringing up, again, their cardiovascular conditioning, because that's something that diminishes, where the youth, it tends to just be there. Because you've got that youthfulness about you, but again, it's different for everybody. Like I've seen some youngsters, it's just like, oh, you poor sucker, like you really need to work on the mobility. And then some older people, it's like, wow, I wish, I'm jealous of your mobility.
Yeah,
but you've just got to go into it with your eyes open. You've got to have that awareness and that mindfulness and be able to provide for them feedback that helps to promote them. And even though you might be training a group collectively, like my ability to even train people via, you know, the technology and online, I think is at a place now. Your ability to just observe and through your own experiences, the feeling, use maybe analogies and metaphors that resonate with people.
Well, mate, you know, you've watched a lot of people move over a long period of time, and it's impossible to not actually learn or almost absorb the ability of analyzing human movement. I mean, that's what you do. You analyze human movement. You understand how it should be. And what it should look like, and you know, your skill is to take that person that's probably not moving as well as they can to moving better, and this is the pathway that you need to follow to get there. I mean, that's what you learn from being a coach for 30 years.
Exactly. Now you know, like in just some of the things that are, like as of late that I've been contemplating, like what's a squat? You know, we can talk about that in words and describe the principles, you know, based through the concept and the theories. But there isn't such thing as a squat out there.
Mm.
So when you squat, you are a squat.
Mm-hmm.
So every fiber of your being, every cell in who you are becomes that squat, not just in your mind.
Yep.
Like, I don't know, it's a little wacky thinking. But that's what I try and say to people, like, to improve your squat, you've got to know yourself so well and become that squat. Now, everyone moves slightly differently, in different ways, but there's fundamentals that you can teach people, and then you've got to let them kind of express themselves. But, you know, and I'm not just talking the squat, like a push-up, you know, a sit-up, a plank, a pull-up, you know, running, whatever that might be. Because everything that we're talking about is contained in and amongst humanity. There's no other form or animal species out there trying to do what we do.
Yeah. No, we move in our own particular. I mean, human movements have dominant human movement patterns.
Yeah.
And I think if you understand what we're meant to be, you know, how we're meant to move as humans, then you pretty much have got your exercise prescription right there in front of you. You don't need to look too far outside of that. The problem is that as we've evolved, as our society has evolved, we've you know, and as technology has evolved, so has our, I guess, requirement for movement has decreased. You know, we don't need to move as much, unfortunately, as we once used to. I love when people talk about the human being as a hunter and collector, literally having to live off the land and hunt animals and so forth. I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast the other day, and he was talking to his guest about the fact that a lot of tribes talked about the skill of hunting through submission. And that was basically when they identified an animal that they wanted to kill, they just would literally chase it across the plains for 2 or 3 days, 4 or 5 days, because eventually the animal will fatigue and submit, whereas humans don't. We tend to we'll keep pushing, but at some point animals will just go, I'm done, I'm lying down. If you're gonna get me, well, you're gonna get me.
That's our will, isn't it? That's something that's innate in our being, and I guess our ability to draw reason to our efforts. But I think that in and of itself, though, can be a friction point for a lot of people, and that those friction points are create justification and excuses.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
We use our will almost in a counterintuitive, manner, or we use it against ourselves.
Yeah. Yep. We self-sabotage, don't we?
Yep.
Very common. Very common.
But then that's why a lot of people will train and exercise in the first place. They'll use those negative thought processes and the emotion that's born of that to be the driver. And that's we speak about that last time, but that's how I used to run, how I used to do majority of things in life.
Yeah, you did touch on that a little bit.
But it wears you out.
Yeah, doesn't it? Yeah, it's exhausting, mate.
Mm. Like why? I don't want to train because I'm angry.
Mm.
You know, like and sometimes, you know, even to this day, certain things in life will frustrate me, and I'm jumping out of my own skin. Being me is difficult, so I'll come into the garage, or I'll go for a run, or I'll do something to just calm it all down. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, but I've also found doing yoga, meditating, just sitting and being with myself, very replenishing as well. It's like eating a good meal, but it's it's recognizing those things within yourself. Like, I remember talking a while back, because if you look at the statistics, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays in gyms used to be the big days, because people had big weekends, they'd blow out, they'd have their cheat day, they feel like shit, and then they feel guilty, and then they go into the gym with that guilt, with that self-loathing, with that resentment, you know, with that anger towards themselves, and beat the bejeebers out of themselves. Man, that's only sustainable for so long. Then what's the point?
Yeah, but you know what? It still happens, mate. It still happens. I mean, I've got a health club, and that still happens. You know, people openly admit it. They come in on Monday night, and the gym's thumping and pumping, and I'm like, you're in for a big session. They go, yeah, I had a big weekend, mate. I've got to work this off. I've had a massive weekend. And we all know that Mondays is National Bench Press Day too, don't we? Uh-huh. Eh?
Yes.
Actually, I think it's International Bench Press Day, Mondays.
But I think with time, you know, and a lot of people, they go through this, you know, the path is through. You've got to have those experiences, but I guess you've also got to be know yourself well enough. Those reasons for engaging with certain things, and over time, you tap into a different way of being, and your reasons for doing things, and I guess that goes back to what we said a little bit earlier about training youngsters to, you know, people kind of in that 30s and 40s to the older population. You know, that 40s, 50s older, they've lived enough life to go, man, I don't need to beat the bejeebers out of myself any longer. Like, I've done all of that. Like, I recognize that, you know, just being there for my family, being there for the community, you know, and engaging with activity in a way that you know, it helps me to feel good about myself, to be able to show up and do other activities and just be okay in my own skin.
Yeah. I was going to ask you what your thoughts are on why you think some people, and I think you've kind of touched on this, but we might just tap into it a bit more. Why do you think it is that some people have an ability to stay focused with exercise and training for substantial periods of time, and others just can't seem to stay consistent? They're training, they're not. They're fit, they're not. They're in shape, they're not. They're on this roller coaster of, you know, I'm looking after myself, and then 6 months later they've just destroyed. Why is that? Why can some people nail it and others are just terribly inconsistent?
I think a lot of it stems back to childhood, much like anything. It's the circles that, well, the environments that they grew up in, and it was encouraged of them. They saw maybe their parents and you know, family members and, you know, those circles involved in activities, and it was kind of embedded. You know, I know for myself that when I'm challenged, I default to a lot of my ways from when I was younger. And because it was there for me from when I was quite young and it was encouraged of me, that's why I've been able to maintain it and be consistent. To be any other way is an agitator. I question myself. I become uncomfortable. Like even Harika, she's like, man, you haven't trained for a few days. You need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you can tell just in my mannerisms, my character, you know, maybe my mood and the like that you know, even if it's just half an hour or something, just to maybe get those endorphins going, you know.
Exercise and training for you seems to be your therapy. Is that a fair enough assumption?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. But I don't know. Like, I love it.
Mm.
I don't have a problem doing it on my own either.
Mm.
But again, a lot of those things were put in place when I was young, and it was encouraged of me, and it was also expected of me.
Yep, that's right.
When I talk the military, like,
yeah, of course,
you know, this is the job description. You need to be able to do this job. What are the things that you need to be able to do this job? And the biggest component of that was your physicality. You had to have the physical conditioning to be able to handle the rigors of the job description. And within all of that, you had to be, I guess, calm enough and in a frame of mind that you could read this. You had that situational awareness.
Yep. Well, I mean, I've always said that people in the army, especially in special forces and the areas that you were invested in, to me, and I've never been in the military, but to me, those people, I just basically describe them as elite athletes, except they're not playing a sport, they're playing for life. But they're just elite athletes in a different, their field of sport has a much more serious outcome. And that's because that's what they are. They're elite athletes. You know, they have to have all the physical attributes of any particular sport: strength, speed, agility, endurance, coordination, power, you know, flexibility. You have to have it all.
Mm.
But you also know that if you don't possess all of those qualities and one of those qualities brings you undone, the outcome is not just a loss on the scoreboard, it's a loss of life perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. Or maybe not your own, you know, you could, an oversight in something could be a safety issue for someone else, or like you said, ultimately, you know, the loss of life in for one of your mates. Now, dealing with the burdens of that, people, and they're motivators, and a lot of that is driven from a place of fear too, though, because you want to. There's a certain expectation that you know you need to live up to and you need to meet. But I think with time and the immersion and just doing it so consistently, it becomes your norm. And back to what you said before, people struggle a lot of the time, and they come in and out of things, they probably don't surround themselves with like-minded individuals or people who are already living that way. And that is society too. There is not too many people, you know, living in that. Like, look at David Goggins, for example. You know, I everyone's got their opinion about the guy, but I only use him as a reference point in the sense of, you know, and kind of where he's at, probably a little more to the extreme end of things. But if you bring that back a little bit, there isn't many people living in that tier.
No.
And to be able to tap into a group or rub shoulders with people who kind of approach life, not just training or exercise, but life in that manner is far and few between. Majority of humanity chases and seeks comfort.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, absolutely. You know, Goggins is he's a complex character. I mean, he's like extreme. He's an outlier, but I'm sure that, and I don't know the guy, I've never met the guy, but, and I'm no psychologist, but I'm sure that a lot of his exercise and a lot of his physical extreme behavior is therapy for something else that's probably happened to him, isn't it?
Of course. And you know, bringing someone else into the conversation now is my own brother. And not many people know of him. But if I was to describe the average, let's not use the word average, but a family man. So he's a guy, you know, he's like 40 years of age, he's married, he's got two kids, he works a job. But what that bloke is capable of is just mind-blowing. You know, he weighs about 85 kilos. Now, he just completed a little competition, like a running event a few weekends ago. But the training leading up to that was what blew me away. And the guy started running 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning and finished at 6 a.m. on the Monday morning. And he ran 7 kilometers every hour on the hour for 24 hours. On his own around the suburbs of where he lives. So that's 160 kilometers in 24 hours.
No. Really?
Thereabouts.
Wow. So he's
with no support, no one there to pat him on the shoulder, to motivate him, to pump him up, to say, come on, man, keep going. You know, let alone doing that in a race where you're racing against other people, there's other factors that drive you. All he was doing was preparing himself for the race. Now, and that's where most people fall over. They're not willing to do the planning and the preparation. And in the army, we had what they call the 7 P's: prior preparation and planning, or prior planning and preparation prevents piss poor performance.
Yep. So just to touch on that. So you're saying that his run of 7 kilometers every hour on the hour for 24 hours was preparation for a race that he's got coming up. Is that what you're saying?
So the race ended up being delayed and he ran it a few weekends ago and it was exactly that. So what they had to do was run 7 kilometers every hour on the hour until they could no longer finish 7 kilometers within the hour.
Ah, right. Okay. Right.
And so I think the Australian record's about 42 hours.
Oh.
And I think the world record's nearly 3 days.
Oh, my goodness.
So imagine that. And that's crazy town. Like, that's out there. But, you know, there's other fantastic, you know, events in the world that people, you know, like there's another mate of mine who he was in SAS. He's out of the military now. I can't remember the name of it. It's like an endurance event in Alaska where it's 1,000 miles and you can walk it, you can ski it, and I think you can ride a mountain bike. And you gotta be self-sustainable.
You know, 1,000 miles.
Yeah, it's like 1,600 kilometers. Yeah.
That's like 1,600 kilometers. That's kind of from Melbourne to Brisbane, I reckon, roughly.
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah.
And is there a set time that you've got to do that in?
I don't know the ins and outs of it all. But there's another a great mate, Danny Cooper. I can't remember, but he's on Instagram, and he's from his time in the military. Then he went on and did a lot of study. He's done a lot in the whole sports science side of thing and kind of getting into the psychology of stuff. He's got some great videos on mindset and resilience and just tapping into those ways of being. But then this is exactly what I'm talking about, providing some information for those who may be listening to or will listen to this. If you want to do some out there stuff, if you want to test your limits, if you want to just find like have a mantra or something that encourages you each day to do what you may not normally do and do it, and then with consistency you reinforce it, create the habit, you got to find these people.
Yeah, yeah.
Tap into it. You got to, because otherwise, if you leave yourself to your own devices, you'll sit on the lounge and watch Netflix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. We all need mentors and people to follow and people that inspire us, because it helps. I mean, everyone needs someone to look up to. There's no doubt. Hey, mate, I know this is a completely unrelated question, but I just wanted to ask you this because, again, I know that having trained so many people over such a long time, you'll nail this for me. The question is simple. A lot of people these days are finding that, okay, if I don't want to train at the gym and I don't want to train outdoors, I might want to have a bit of a home setup.
Yeah.
What, in your opinion, if someone wanted to create their own little training oasis in their shed, their garage, or their lounge room, or wherever it is, you know, a reasonable space, you don't need to go and buy a $15,000 treadmill, because quite often they end up becoming a clothes rack, right?
Yeah.
What pieces of equipment, let's say 3 to 5 pieces of equipment, would you advise people to purchase that would allow them to train for a variety of physical qualities? What's your go-tos?
So definitely in the strength side of things, and it's not going to cost you too much. Some hexagonal dumbbells.
Yep. As he points to them right there.
Look at them all.
Yep.
Rows of the stuff all the way to the back. You know, like
they're the best.
All the bumper plates, but hexagonal dumbbells, the variety of exercises that you can do is just off the chart. And you need to think about, in a general sense, human activity and how you use your body each day. Now, there is a number of exercises that there's only a number of exercises that you really need to do to support that. And when it comes to resistance training, you don't have to lift oodles of weights. It's just the fashion and the way in which you lift it and your relative capacity to be able to lift it. And that's where the consistency comes in, because then with time, you'll be able to do more in shorter periods of time.
Yep.
So definitely hexagonal dumbbells. I think some odd object type training, like some sand, like a sandbag, and a sandbag, you buy the sandbag and then you just got to fill it with some sand. You know, you either can go and buy sand from Bunnings or, you know, it's easy enough to access. So there's two. I think in the sense of cardio, you can always run.
Yep.
Or you can do some jumping jacks or star jumps on the spot. But something that just another skill is skipping.
Yep.
And having a skipping rope. And I definitely recommend getting your hands on a decent skipping rope, because you'll get frustrated and you'll end up, the money you spend on a cheap ass one, you'll throw it out and end up spending the money on a better one. I guarantee it. And that's, you know, that's three pieces of equipment that is very entry level. You know, you got a yoga mat or an exercise mat, and you can do a whole host of other bodyweight exercises, your lunges, you know, your push-ups, your sit-ups, and a lot of those isometric plank positions. If you want to tier that up and go after a little bit more in the strength side of things, definitely reckon a barbell and some bumper plates.
Yep.
Again, I'm very much in that free weight mind. And then if you want any other cardio type machines, and you've got the money and you view health and well-being high enough on your list of priorities, and you value it enough, you're getting something like a, can you see like the ski, like a skier,
yeah, ski erg,
or even the, even a stationary bike. You know, everyone bangs on about those assault bikes. You know, they're a fantastic bit of kit. You know, 10 minutes on one of those, half an hour on one of those, and you'll know how good your cardio is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, maybe a flat bench so you can do some other type of or maybe a what do you call it, like a multi-bench. So you can have it as a flat bench, have it as an incline, decline, you know, so you can play around some other exercises. And then you can go up again and get something like a rack system that you can mount off a wall or have freestanding if you've got the space. Like I've got one. I've got a few new rowers in actually. And but see the rack system with the J-hooks and everything. Yeah. My surfboard conveniently resting on the top of the pull-up rig at the moment. it's the life of a trainer, mate. But it doesn't need to be super expensive. And, you know, those pieces of Concept 2 kit are nowhere near the cost of a fancy treadmill. And those things, if you look after them, they'll look after you.
Yeah. Yep. Well, what you've talked about there, as you said, is not expensive, very accessible, very, very small footprint. They don't take up a lot of space. Right. They're stackable. They're rackable. You know, you could probably get yourself into a decent home setup for less than $400, $500. And then if you're looking at ski ergs and bikes and so forth, well, that's going to blow it out to maybe a couple of grand, three grand or something that. Yeah.
But you'll have a lot of those things. They'll last you. Oh, the last years.
Of course. Of course. Well, a good set of dumbbells is going to be if you look after them and keep them dry and keep them out of the weather, the elements, those hex rubber dumbbells behind you, they're going to last you
your lifetime.
Your lifetime, literally. Exactly. Mate, I've always said if you've got a couple of sets of dumbbells or a set of dumbbells and a bench, I'll show you 50 exercises in 5 minutes. Hey? Yeah. Versatile.
They are. And, you know, like I love kettlebells and the like, but there's a lot of skill. Mm-hmm. And the time needs to be spent. Like you can get on Instagram or, you know, social media and put in kettlebells and you can see some people doing some absolutely amazing stuff with kettlebells and tricks. And, you know, like, I'd love to be able to do it. I just don't have the time to invest into, you know, doing all those amazing things.
Well, as you said, I mean, a lot of those things are, yes, they're exercises, but they're also kind of tricks. And the average person, you don't need to do them. It's fun, but you don't need to do them in order to get a physical outcome, do you?
But then, you just segue into something I was thinking is social media and half the nonsense that people post with these ridiculous exercises. Like they're trying to have a point of difference. I get it. And do something that someone else or the collective are not doing. But a lot of the time, it doesn't need to be done. Like, don't waste your time with it, honestly.
That's right.
And because you're seeing someone else do it and then you try or attempt to do it and then you go, oh, but I can't do it, then you become disheartened.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, half the time, these things are tricks. Mm-hmm. They're things that people have spent a lot of time honing before they put the video camera in front of them and film it.
Well, that's right. And by their own admission, a lot of people who are honest enough to admit it will say that it took them 15 attempts to get the trick on the video to then load up onto their social media, you know. Yeah. So, but I've got a feeling, mate, that people are becoming a little bit more aware of when they scroll through their social media, they know what's a bit of trickery, or as the term is, gym fuckery, and what is legitimate, you know, usable
content.
Yeah, exactly. That's the word. Thank you. All right. Now, you're doing a lot of outdoor stuff. You're doing some online stuff. How do people become a part of your tribe and continue to connect with you? How do they reach out and how can they work with you?
Yeah, so the Commando Steve website, if you're online, and then that has everything there. It'll point you in the different directions and all the social media handles. So Instagram's Commando Steve, Facebook page, there's Commando Steve. But the training side of things, Get Commando Fit. So there's also an Instagram page for Get Commando Fit. And the training that we actually do in a daily sense is under that Get Commando Fit banner. In the online sense, we're working on getting back to that place. Not for those that are listening that have experienced the Get Commando Fit program online in the past, it won't be to that level and degree, but the ability to be a part of the community remotely. So, you know, if you can't be face-to-face, at least you can tap into it, do a workout of the day, you know, plug your score in, you know, people can kind of, you know, comment and thumbs up and, you know, kudos. And when there is that sense of community and you have to dig deep and you're on your own in the,
yeah,
the garage, you know, there's others out there, you know, sharing in that experience, doing it, you know, somewhere else. And I think that's another driving force that that helps us to maintain, you know, our efforts and be accountable.
Mate, there's no doubt that people love being a part of a group, a tribe and a community. They love that togetherness. And I think that's even become more apparent over the last 14 months. What about the face-to-face stuff? Are people still able to work with you there, or are your numbers capped out? What's the situation there?
People can still train with us. You know, we run 5 sessions a day, Monday to Friday, and 2 on a Saturday, 2 on a Sunday. You know, there's myself and a few other trainers, and we've got a couple of different locations, you know, working on other things. And you know, I'd love to get like a bit of an affiliate program up and running, you know, where other gyms could, you know, complement their existing training program with, you know, what it is that we do if they don't do something already. Or, yep. You know, come and actually, you know, do the sessions with us, which, you know, I know can be challenging. You know, geez, I've got one young guy who actually wants to get into being a trainer. He drives, so we're kind of on the other side of Castle Hill, and he drives from the Central Coast every day, 7 days a week to come and train with us. He drives at least an hour each way.
Wow, that's impressive. That's commitment.
Yeah, but what he's done is just phenomenal. Actually, I did a post just today with him in my stories, like he is in the full extension phase of the snatch. So, you know, he's up on his toes, the knees extended, the hips open. He's in that shrug position, ready to kind of pull under the bar. It looks, you know, just like his handle, Changi in full flight. It just,
yeah, nice.
I love that stuff. You know, like it puts a smile on your face.
Yeah, it does. Mate, excellent. Once again, really good to chat to you. Insightful, honest. You always speak from a place of service and support. I appreciate that. It's been great, and thank you again for giving up your time. I hope that people continue to watch you with interest, because you've been a part of this scene for such a long time, and there's a lot that people can learn from you. So once again, man, appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ross. Thanks, everybody.
Take care. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I'd appreciate it greatly if you would follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook, The Australian Fitness Podcast. If you would like to reach out to me for professional services or to know more about my background, visit www.russelljarrett.com.au. And you can also follow me on Instagram at russell_jarrett1. If you have any questions or feedback, feel free to email us at info@australianfitnesspodcast.com.au. If you have any ideas for guests that you would feel would be valuable to our listeners, let us know. Currently, Australian Fitness Podcast doesn't have a sponsor. If you think your product or service would be a good match for the show, reach out to us. Thanks, and we'll see you soon.